and please join me in welcoming our main speaker, Lynn T. from San Francisco.
Hi, everybody. My name's Lynn, I'm an alcoholic. Well, isn't this something? You know, it's Saturday night, here we are in this lovely church, whole bunch of people, some of them I know, some of you I have no idea who you are, and we're listening to people talk about the disease of alcoholism, and hopefully a little bit about recovery through the 12-step program called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't know about you, but when they asked me what I wanted to be when I was in seventh grade, it wasn't to be here on a Saturday night. And yet, here I am, and I'm so very, very grateful. And I'm glad you're here, too. As a matter of fact, when I was in seventh grade, they asked us, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I said, first I wanted to be a judge. I didn't want to be an attorney, but I wanted to be a judge. And you can guess what my number one character defect is. The next thing I wanted to be was the first woman on the moon. Because I'd gotten a little chemistry set and a binocular and a little microscope when I was about third grade. And I thought, yeah, I'll be a scientist and I'll be the first woman on the moon. And the other thing was I wanted to be the first woman president of the United States. Now, all of that's significant only because I want to be something, but I didn't want to do what was necessary to do that. As soon as it got a little tough, as soon as I had to get some grades, as soon as I had to do whatever, I pretty much checked out. And it just seems to be my nature until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. So if you are new or fairly new, and I've seen some new people in this room, and some of this doesn't make sense to you, or it's a new lingo, a new jargon. If you're like me, I came in and tried to just look really hip and cool, like I knew what you were talking about. I didn't want to ask any questions because that would make you less than. And if you're like that, and you're like me, and you're kind of thinking, well, we should get done so we can get home by 10, I could use some more cookies, you know, any of that stuff, that was me. I had one foot in and one foot out. You know, I would look around the room, not to see who was smiling and nodding. I was looking around to see who's single. And that didn't always work out really well, but I didn't drink. So whatever your reasons for being here, if you are here, we are the lucky ones in this room tonight. There are people who have struggled to get here, who haven't made it. People who are still working hard to get here, and you know, it's almost beyond their reach. But we, as the people that are here, can always lend that hand and always welcome people. And no matter how many times you've been here, you know, I want to welcome you if you're brand new, if you're a returnee new. Sometimes it takes us a couple practice runs. I do know that after a while, the practice runs can lead to more serious hospitals, institutions, and death. So if you're here, my experience is it's easier to stay here than it is to get back here. So if it's really bad tonight or something really bugging you this week, pick up that really heavy phone and call somebody or go to a meeting or read something in the big book, because those are the things that we do here. That's the magic, you know, and it's attainable by all. If you are an old-timer, I don't say old-timer, long-timer, because now I are one. If you are a long-timer, and what I've noticed over the years is sometimes we can kind of stay in the background, and I think it's time, you know, I try to volunteer, I try to get involved, I try to, you know, be active. And to maintain my sobriety, I've always learned that no matter what I have been doing to maintain it, I have to step it up just a little bit. Just a little bit. If I stay on an even keel, I'm probably going to be sliding backwards a little bit. So if you're trying to maintain your program, you know, get involved. I'm pretty sure, thank you, by the way, Lucas and Leela and David are here. A lot of guys are at dinner tonight. Thank you, Chris, for reading. You kind of scared me when you brought the big book up. I said, okay. I don't know. And but if you need to get some sort of commitment to keep you from trolling and doing the three stooges thing, there are people you can ask, and there are jobs to be had. And I did that, and, you know, I didn't think it would be that significant, but sooner than that, it made me feel like I belonged. It made me feel like, yeah, I'm one of them, you know? Nobody can kick me out now. I'm okay. I'm doing well. I thought I was going to be the 10-minute speaker today. I thought that right up to about 5 o'clock tonight. And I had a really good 10-minute spiel for you. And I packed up because I thought, well, you know, I hate it when you didn't do it for me. It's really nice. People come up and they're the 10-minute speaker and they go, well, I was born in a little town and then so and I'm thinking, oh, no, here we go. And, yeah, because we don't need to do that. But I was born in a little town and then so now I have 40 minutes. And I came from non-alcoholic parents. My sisters weren't alcoholic. And I'm the one, you know, I was the one. And I'm actually very grateful for that. I know that's sickening, but it's true. My parents were good people. I didn't know it until it was almost too late for me to really realize how much they sacrificed and did for us. We didn't have a lot of money, but they always made sure we were clean clothes and we went to church. We didn't swear. We knew manners. We did all that stuff, you know. And I'm still an alcoholic, you know. When I see people that have had really rough childhood, you know, and they talk about, oh, just horrendous things, growing up with drug addict parents and stuff, I go, wow, that must be really hard. It's hard enough for me, and it was pretty even keel at my house. I went to therapy one time many years ago. It was group therapy. Of course, I went drunk, which always makes it a little harder. And it wasn't for drinking, so therefore, you know, it was for being a battered wife, and I was one. And I went to it, and this one gal was talking about she was so disconnected from her mother, and she hated her mother. And I'm thinking, cheapers, you know. In my household, I was very close to my mom, and if anything got sideways or awry, we would figure it out. We would talk about it. And I'm judgmental, thinking, oh, my God, you know, you just talk to your mom. And then she went on to tell this story about how when she was 13, her mother ran around after her in the house with a pair of scissors and stabbed her in the back. And so I thought, you know, I probably wouldn't be talking to my mom either. And so sometimes here even there's more to that story. And it says to share in a general way what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. And sometimes we share a lot. Sometimes that's just stuff we need to share with another alcoholic on the side. And I have both those opportunities. So I don't have anything in my past that I'm ashamed of anymore. I'm hoping that whatever happened to me can be used sometime for somebody when they need to identify. Because that's why we do this, you know, just for the identification. And I came in here and I wasn't going to identify. You know, you didn't drink like I drank. You didn't have your problems like I had. You weren't raised like I was raised. So on and on and on. And then somebody started to say, but, so how about this and this? And I think, one of the reasons, and I'll say this over and over, to keep coming back is because eventually we get you. But no, eventually, eventually you'll hear something, and eventually the walls start to lower or crumble or loosen up. And if you judge it, I just had a phone call from a very good friend of mine, and she goes, do you know anybody who's sober in Albuquerque? I said, I'm thinking. And I said, why? And she goes, well, I got a friend who lived there, and her son's really having a problem. And I said, well, did she call or did she call? Well, she called. And I said, okay, has he gone to AA? Yeah, but he doesn't like it. He doesn't like it. And I said, well, you know, those are the things that we do. We tell people, go to AA. If you don't like a meeting, go to another one. You know, I've never seen somebody say, oh, I went to one bar, and it was terrible, so I quit drinking, you know. Or I tried this kind of booze, and oh, it was awful, so I just didn't get it anymore. You know, we are very resilient. We pursue and pursue. You know. And so I think, just go to another meeting, you know. Because And then tell the mother to go to Al-Anon, of course, because all you Al-Anons are in there, I really appreciate that. The only reason I'm still married is because I went to Al-Anon for a while, and I got the package. You know? I figured it out. But it's a wonderful program, and I'm so glad that there are people that come here at speaker meetings with couples, and you know they each have their program. Each two alcoholics, they each have their program. I'm married to this wonderful man. And that's 30 years I've been married to the same man. And if my friend Beverly was here, she'd stand up and say, and that's a friggin' miracle. And it really is. But we go to meetings, and we've had a life where we haven't always been near meetings. So that was always, I'll get to that later, but it's nice to show up with friends and family and people so that they get to know what we do here. I also understand we have a group of guys that are recovering, and they're from the VA. And I want to thank you for your service, and glad you're up here. I am married to a veteran, and I grew up in the 60s, and a lot of my friends and family went to Vietnam, and with draft and otherwise, so I know that when you come back, sometimes things can be really tough. So I'm glad you're here. There are folks in this room, and you just stick close to us. Okay. Let's see, somebody said I should do a drunk-a-log. Oh, goodness. I have a few interesting stories. The fact that I wasn't raised around alcoholics, that I didn't really know what that looked like, and when I had lots of opportunities, I did a lot of things even while I was drinking. I was an outside sales rep in Southern California, and I did really well. And I won an award, you know. And when I was in, I guess it was 19, I went around the world on an ocean liner. It was a school, and I was accepted. I don't know how my father paid for it, but I didn't worry about that. You know, I went on that, and I got to be exposed to Asia and Africa and all that cool stuff. I will tell you that it's also a lot of countries do not have drinking agents, and there were a lot of places that I went that I have very little recollection of. I have no idea about Tokyo, I can tell you that. And I was 19, and I was already drinking way more than was, I don't know, acceptable. And I came home, and you would have thunk, you know, I would just be, oh, I was on the dating game once, you know. I mean, you know, little things like that, just little things like that. So I had like, oh, I have all these aspirations. I want to be the first woman president. But I don't know how to get there. I don't know what you do to get there. Nobody said, you ask questions, you go to school, you get a counselor that tells you. I had no idea. So when it didn't, just the fairy godmother didn't just come over and go, boom. Now you're a judge, you know, or now you're whatever you wanted to be. It was just looked like it was awfully hard work. So I married a guy that was really cute, and he had a steak night eat, and we could drink, and he drank like I drank. And so a lot of times when the path was coming down to the fork in the road, there would be this one part that would have been good for the long run, that would have taken some work, and I'd always take the easier, softer way. And usually it was with a him. That marriage didn't last very long, actually. He had a little thing about working, you know, other women, you know, a few things like that. So we didn't last very long. And but I was well into my alcoholism by then. And so the next person that showed up that drank like I drank, I married him too. And his assets were, I married him if they asked me, it was the stupidest thing. So he owned a bar up in Shaver Lake, and he was a tall, good-looking Italian. The only problem was he had a really bad temper, but I could overlook that because there was this bar, and I'm only in my early 20s when I'm doing this, and my poor parents are looking at me like, what happened, you know, what happened to that girl that was trying to do all those things? And I'm going, well, later, because right now I'm having fun, and I had fun to the tune of many black eyes and broken ribs. And I couldn't get out of that marriage because I thought it looked like a failure. And the crazy thing about that is he left me. And he said, I'm just tired of eating you up. You know, when they talk about we take hostages and we fought, you know, that was kind of one of those first times. So I said, wait. You know, so I moved on, and I came to San Luis Obispo. My mom had moved here, and when all else failed, go home to mom. And I got a job here in San Luis Obispo County, and it was as a correctional officer at the county jail. Now, doesn't that sound wonderful? I mean, when you're drinking like I was drinking, this is going to be a little tricky. I interview well. You know, I get jobs. I can get a job. Showing up sober or showing up at all was a little hard for me. But I was going to do the sheriff thing because they had benefits, and I was going to clean up my act, and I wasn't going to drink so much, and things were going to be different. And they weren't. I figured out how to drink, and, you know, oh, it was a mess. I would go into the jail, and I would tell them I wanted my dinner break out in my car. And I had a little ice chest, and I had all my stuff, and I'm trying to drink. Take a bite of onion, you know, walk in. And the inmates would look at me like, something's wrong with this chick, you know? And they started turning me in. And one day, we had a new thing where it was a 12-hour shift. It was a whole thing. I had to work from 8 in the morning to 8 at night. And, you know, when that happens, you have to fortify. And they wouldn't let me go outside anymore. Surprise. So for 8 hours, I wasn't going to have a drink. And in my, you know, and I was 27 years old, I could not go 8 hours without a drink. I couldn't go a day. People that came in to AA and were talking about being a, what is it when you drink on weekends? What? No, you don't drink, and it's a word. See, it's just a foreign to me. Periodic, that's what it is, periodic. I was definitely not a periodic. And when I saw people that were periodic, I was so glad I wasn't, because I don't know if I would ever quit drinking. Because that would have told me, geez, you know, you can quit now and then, you know, look ahead. I drank every day, all day, in the morning, noon, and night. And one day I showed up at the sheriff's department a little over fortified. You know, it's hard to get just the right place, you know. And this one gal, she was the prettiest one of them, and she was giving me the who's in the drunk tank and who's there and who's there. And I passed out. And I passed out onto the floor, and they came with a gurney, and they took me out past all the trustees, you know, past everybody. And they put me in the ambulance, and that was October 1979. They took me to General Hospital, and I told them I didn't want them to take my blood. But you know, when the sheriff wants the blood, he can get the blood. And I don't know what I was that night. I think I was like a 2-1 or something. My drunk driving back in night, when I was small, I don't know, 23, I had a 2-8 that night driving a company car on Los Angeles Freeway. And that's what I did. That's how I drank. So anyway, long story short, I had all weekend to sit there and think about that drinking episode and what I was going to say on Monday to my sheriff upper. And I went in and I had about, because I've used the, you know, mouthwash thing, hypoglycemia, you know, low blood sugar, I've used all that. And now I walked in, I thought, what am I going to tell them? And they said, so, what do you think? And I turned away from them, and I looked at the wall, and from God's lips, my lips, he said, I think I have a problem with alcohol. And that was not what I had planned on saying. Not a bit. And they said, good, because this was in the 80s where all the Six Shadles and Betty Fords and stuff were starting to happen. And they said, you'll go into a recovery unit, you can have your job back. I said, okay. But you have to know I wasn't ready to quit drinking. I just wanted my job back. So I went to that 28-day program. I think I got out after 25 because I'm so smart. And I didn't do what they said to do. And lo and behold, that was October. I was drunk by Thanksgiving all the way through until February. And then I got sober on February 3rd, 1980. And they called me like February 12th and said, you can have your job back. And I'm really rummy. I mean, this is not a good, bad timing, you know. And I went back, and believe it or not, I didn't like it sober. I had wanted that badge, and I had wanted that power. It talks about it in the big book, you know, lack of power is our dilemma. Ooh, I wanted a gun, I wanted all sorts of things. And I went back, and they were always eyeing me. I mean, everything was what I was drinking, what I was touching, and it wasn't comfortable. So I parted ways with them. And I'm very grateful for that. It was one of the many times where I went home and I felt so dejected and like, God, you weren't giving me what I want, and you know, this was it, and I'm alone. And so I've learned over the years that sometimes it's a blessing or a blessing in disguise. And I just have to be patient enough to find out later that it's really been a blessing. So after that, I was kind of, I stayed sober after that. I was sort of hell-bent on, you know, making up for lost time. I wanted two or three jobs. I wanted this and that. And my sponsor, which I finally got a sponsor, because I had a boyfriend, and he had 8 years, and so, you know, he wasn't me a sponsor then, right? And with Dad one day, he said, would you get a sponsor? He was sick of my stuff. So I got a sponsor, and then we started taking the book a little at a time. I'm so smart, you know, I thought, let's just get this over with. I'm ready to rock and roll. He said, no, you have to do this a little slower than most people. And I said, okay. You know, I said, okay. She reminded me of Mother Teresa from a nightclub. I mean, she was this little Italian, just, you know, and she didn't mince words, but she was gentle with me. And I got the exact right sponsor, and if you don't have a sponsor, please look around and try and find yourself somebody that you can identify with. If it doesn't work out, you know, say I'm going to do a 30-day, let's do a trial run. And if it doesn't work out, ask that person if they would help you find a sponsor. Hopefully all of us have our egos in check where what we really want is for you to get sober and stay sober. We don't want a herd of sponsees. You know, that's not the point. I had a sponsee not too long ago who had agreements and she couldn't keep them. And then she drank and we tried one more time and then she drank again. And I said to her, you know, you need to find somebody where you can work with them in a different way. Because it's a deadly disease. What if we don't get the disease? I'm not going to try and drag her through the steps and, you know, make her quit drinking. That's not the point. The point was for her to have a spiritual awakening, for her to get sobriety. And if it wasn't working with me, let's go find you somebody that was you can work with. So that's how we are around here. Totally different than the kind of thinking I was raised in. It was, you know, you're competitive, you got to win, the more the better. And around here, we just want what's best for you. We're your cheerleaders. We want you to succeed and stay with us. And if you go back out, you come back in, nobody's going to go, oh, my God. Well, maybe you kind of door through it. No, oh, here they come again, you know, loser, loser. No, we're just glad they're back, you know, that you made it back. Because sometimes people can't make it back or they don't make it back. So I hope that you will keep that in mind. So, let's see. A lot of things happen, like they do in sobriety. Good things. Most of it. You know, a few broken hearts. I got a little business. I got to run that. Because I found alcoholics are really good at being self-employed. We work harder for ourselves than anybody could. And, you know, I really start with my experience. I work 6-7 days a week. And, you know, go, 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 go. Reminds me of somebody. And that was good for me. That was really good for me. It came a time when I got a little burned out, and my sponsor came to me one time, and she said, I think I was 5 years in, I was 5 years sober, as a matter of fact. And she said, you need to get away. And if you don't, you are going to get spiritually and physically sick. And I'm thinking, easy for you to say, you know, you've got retirement coming in, what am I going to do for money? How am I going to do this? And she said, I don't know, but you pray about that. Because you need to stop doing what you're doing. It's taking too much of a toll on you spiritually and physically. And she never lied to me. So I put that out in the universe, and lo and behold, my mom took over my business. That guy I talked about that had 8 years more than me, he took over my little tiny apartment. I ended up buying one of my dad's V8, Delta 88, V8, boom. And I pulled a little trailer. And I sold it all over Mexico and the southwestern states by myself. I wasn't going that fast forever, but you know, you do run into some people. And that was great. And I came back a year later and I was so zen, you know, I was just like, I hadn't had television, I'd been reading, I'd been meditating, you know, all that stuff. And I crossed the border from Mexico to San Diego and all these people are driving so fast. And they've got, you know, 19-year-olds and BMWs and I'm going, what is going on here? You know? And I tried to hold on to that, but it's hard to hold on to when we're inundated with so much information and stuff that's happening. So my sponsor said one time, she just quit watching the news. I said, well, how can you do that? She goes, it's the same thing month after month, year after year. Yeah, probably. So I still haven't let go of it. But I try not to figure out how to go to Fixner all the time. Which isn't always helpful. The fact that God has been working in my life, and I was raised by in a nice religion where it was easy. There was no purgatory. You know, we had good things. And the thing I learned at that church was about fellowship. And so when you guys started talking about fellowship, I thought, oh, okay, I kind of know about those things, barbecues, and, you know, you hang out, and people are pretty nice. And so I learned that from the church that I was in. But when I came here, that was my higher power. And if you are having trouble with God, higher power, whatever, again, keep coming back because it will change. Nobody stands at the front door, thank goodness, and says, Leanne, what's your higher power? Okay, that's what you have, and that's what you're stuck with. And you always have to have that. And over the years, I've been sober like a long time, and I've had probably 4 or 5 different higher powers. And right now, my mind that works the best for me is air. Always available. I never have to, you know, go very far. It's right there. And I can inhale, and I can inhale love. I can inhale peace. I can inhale serenity. And I can exhale fear or hate or road rage. and that has worked. I've had trees and ocean and all those things, but I haven't had the Christian type anymore. And so if it's confusing for you, I was to a meeting not too long ago, and there was a gal there, and I loved what she had to say. She goes, when I start working with someone new, the first thing I do is I ask them to write down what they want their higher power to be. Everything. I want available, loving, kind, intuitive, you know, whatever you want your higher power to be. That's it. It doesn't have to be anything else. That can be it. Well, this is interesting thinking. You know, this is sort of different than the norm. And we kind of do that all the time around here. But I didn't let the higher power concept frighten me off or make me discontent. And I watch it in you guys. I see it all the time. Especially if I haven't seen somebody for a long time. And just things are going, and things are doing, and it's just incredible. I mean, it's really incredible. It's the best reason to stick around. It's better than, you know, television. We can hear stories about when I got sober in Melody, the old Melody, we had guys, we had railroad Mike, and he would talk about how he lost the train once. And not to be outdone, somebody else said, oh, World War II, I lost the train. And so there was a lot of World War II-ish stuff going on there. But it was enticing. It was entertaining, you know, and we go to coffee afterwards. And it was just that sort of someplace else to be besides home thinking about drinking. Or, you know, going places where there was a lot of drinking. We can do that. It says in the big book we can do that. But for good reason, and it was probably with someone else along with us. And I went with a friend one time, and her brother and a guy were in town, and she said, well, we're going to go out to Las Ocas Valley. Yeah, there was an inn there. It doesn't exist anymore. And they had dancing and stuff, and so we were going to go do that. And these guys were going to drink, and she and I were going to have soda. And so the other guy comes up to me, and he kind of sizes me up, and he goes, oh, yeah, that's right. You can't drink. And I go, oh, yes, I can. I can. I mean, what a stupid thing to say. I could probably drink him under the table if I wanted to, but I, of course, I didn't. And if somebody says, oh, you can't drink, I go, I drink water, I drink, you know, drinking doesn't have to just be alcohol. Give me a bit. Let me see if I can do this without choking. I find that as you're older, if you try to breathe and talk and drink at the same time, it doesn't work. Good. Well, in this whole mishmash of stuff, as my life is sort of, you know, going down, trudging, sometimes happily, sometimes difficultly, I went to a conference, an AA conference up in Monterey. And you have to understand, I was like 30 pounds lighter than I am now, and I had long blonde hair, and I thought I was going to have sex, actually. And that could be. And I'm walking down the pier, and this guy comes up to me, and he says, hi, I've been watching you, and I'd like to buy you a drink. So I figured he's not at the conference, you know. And at least I hope not. And I said, I don't drink. I was like, I was shopping or something. And he goes, well, I don't drink either. I'm going, yeah, okay, you know, we'll come on, like, I don't drink. Well, let's go over here to my boudoir. So we went and we had a Diet Coke. And we had a Diet Coke, and we had been having Diet Coke now for 30 years. But the strangest part of it, you know, when I went to Mexico and I met some people, I met this really rich guy, and he had planes and houses and boats and all that stuff, and he drank, but okay. And, you know, one day it came to me that, would I ever date this guy if he was not rich? No. He didn't treat me very well. And I go to my sponsor and says, we can't talk about it anymore. You either have to do something different, because if she was the sick of me, he said this and I said that, blah, 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 blah. And she said, I can't talk to you about it anymore. So when I meet Rod, and he's doing all these wonderful things to try and come and see me from Washington State. I mean, he's flying on military flights and doing all, and I'm thinking, well, that's nice, you know, that's nice. And then he shows up, and I'm telling him, you know, I was just not that interested. And I would go to my sponsor, and she goes, so what's up with that? And I don't know. You know, he's just so friggin' nice. And so, yeah, that is a problem, you know. And I said, well, you know, he's just not my type. And she said, good, because your type doesn't work. And I have no retort to that. I mean, I have nothing I can say back to that. So he keeps showing up, and he's going to live on a sailboat. You know, who would want to do that? But anyway, I've come back from Mexico. I'm back 5 years. I got gypsy blood in me. And this naive guy is going to go to Mexico on a sailboat, and all I have to do is change everything. I have to get a renter for my house, because now I'm successful. I bought a little condo. I have to do something with my car. I have, you know, all these things that I have to do. And every one of them, again, fell exactly into place. So he calls me from Mexico. This was years ago when he didn't have cell phones. I mean, you had to go down to the corner store in Mexico and, you know, meet the woman down. And of course, I'm on the phone all the time, so he can't get through. Bless your heart. You were so good. And so he finally got through, and I said, okay, I'm going to move on the boat. The thing that really scared me, there was nothing on the other end of the phone. Hello, hello, I'm going, hello. He goes, oh, okay. What was this? You know, just a fart? Trying to get me to come down there now that I can't. Anyway, long story short, I did all that stuff, you know. And my girlfriends were all saying, oh yeah, you're going to do this. I said, I am. I hardly know the guy, really. I really hardly know the guy, but I knew he was a good guy. And I prayed about it. Every time I would pray, and I'd say, God, I'm ready for the next chapter. Please tell me 10 minutes he'd call from Mexico. And I'd be going, no, 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 no. That's not what I meant. I meant I wanted a high-paying, powerful job where I had to do very little. And a company car and a cell phone, the kind that was those big company ones. I wanted one of those. And that's what I wanted. And God said, okay, here's what you're going to do. So I packed up a lot of stuff, and I moved on to that boat. I flew to Puerto Vallarta where he was. I got on the boat, and then we're together. And God's infinite wisdom, it's like, well, Anson, you can't seem to get along with people when you have outs, because I'm a little bit of that my way or the highway kind of person. I'm going to put you on a boat with one other person where you can't, you can't speak or anything. And so there were times where I would have checked out because things get hard. I don't like when things are tough. And so I would go, okay, so what's the solution to this? And I'd bring out the big book or I'd pray or meditate or whatever. And the answer would be, how about you learn to compromise? And I think, really? But that's what it was. I'd had to learn new skills. And so I was, it was hard for me, you know, hard for me to get out of that. And poor guy, really, he was just as locked in with me, if you can imagine. That was not, I mean, I act like it was tough on me. He had the hard job. I didn't completely learn how to navigate, but I did learn how to sail. So if I had to get, you know, if he accidentally fell overboard, for instance, I knew which way land was, and I could sail to it. So there's that. And we got along pretty well. I mean, he was the captain of the ship, and then there came a time when we were co-captains, and then I became the admiral, you know. It all worked out. It all worked out. There was a time before we even got married, let's see, we were in the Gulf of Mexico, and the only reason I'm telling this is because Tom Bowles loved this story, and now Susan told me I have to tell it. So, and this is God working in my life, once again. We were in the Gulf of Mexico. We were leaving Galveston. I wanted to go left to New Orleans. The wind wasn't going to let us do that. One storm went out, and we followed behind it because we were going to pick up the wind and go. Unfortunately, that one stalled, and another northern came down, and we were stuck between, stuck between the two of them. And we just were in this ocean like a washing machine, big washing machine. I didn't mention, by the way, I get seasick. And so I must have really wanted to be on that boat, I can tell you that. I lost a lot of weight. It was my way of dieting. So it was okay. It was okay. So I was getting bad. I mean, I was getting seriously bad. I was dehydrating. I hadn't had anything stay down in me for 3 or 4 days. And he decided he had to call the Coast Guard. And through a series of things with some Cajun ship guys and oil platforms, all these things were happening, and the helicopter came. And I hadn't been out of the boat for quite a while, and I get up and I look out, and it was horrible. The waves are coming up, and they're blowing, and they're just smoking, you know? And I have my little socks on, and I make this sticky mess. I'm going to take my socks off and put them in my pockets, because they might get wet. And he looks at me like that. The dear guy packed me a container with a book and my toothpaste and my insurance papers and all that stuff. And we go up on the deck, and, you know, he's hove too, because you can't sail in it. There's, you know, we're just bouncing around. And they send a guy down, and he gets tangled in the rigging, and they take him back up. And they bring down a gurney, and they lay it, and he lays it on the boat's worksheet. And they tell him on the radio, do not tie that to your boat. We do not want to be tied to your boat. He says, fine. He says, get in it, and I'm trying to get in it. I'm not feeling good. I mean, I'm really not feeling good. I'm hallucinating. It's not good. And he tries to strap me down. He straps my feet. He straps my waist. And he wants to strap my arms down. I didn't want my arms down. So I said, no, I have to have my arms. So right at that moment, and he's going to tie the bag on, and they're going to lift me up, and everything's going to be hunky-dory. No. The boat lurches sideways. It rolls, and then it rolls again, and I just go right over the boat into the water with my feet, and then I go face first down into the water. Now, the helicopter has, they're way the heck over there. They don't want to have anything to do with those sailboats, so they're way over there, and Rod's starting to get undressed. They jump in the water. I don't know how he's going to get back on the boat, but that's the neighbor home over there. And I'm under, and I cannot get my head up for air. I'm like turtled under the water. And I'm thinking, later, actually, I don't think I found anything. I'm thinking, gosh, you know, first I'm an alcoholic who's going to die of dehydration, and now I'm going to drown. You know, kind of ridiculous. So the helicopter gets the notice, and they go zooming up a big flat. This is all here today. I did not watch this. And I come whooping out of the water, and all Rod can see, because when it's blowing 30, 40 miles an hour, you can't hear anything, you know. So he just sees this mouth. And I'm, you know, penduluming out, and I get into this helicopter, and I'm freezing, and I go, my bag, and I go, we have no more fuel. You are not getting your bag. Okay. I have no shoes, I have no ID, and my socks are in my pocket, but they're pretty wet by now, you know. And he takes me in, and he says, well, take your clothes off, and they were like 24, pretty good looking too. And I'm taking it all off, you know, because my mother taught me to wear clean underwear, and I had a clean underwear. But when I got down to my underwear, he said, no, you can use that. And I said, okay. And I laid down in this like mummy bag full of warm stuff. And they took me to a hospital, just like on the movies, where they land on the roof of the hospital. And then these guys come out, bang, 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 through the doors, and they throw me on there, and bang, 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 and the lights are going past. And they can't find a vein to give me any an IV, because they're all shriveled up. I hear a football game in the other room. I'm thinking, oh, cool. So anyway, long story short on that one, I got some ID, I went to a motel, I'm waiting to find out where he is. We have no cell phones, we don't have long-range radios, we've got none of that stuff. So he figures out how to get a hold of me, and then we do that. In the meantime, I have walked with the shoes that these people gave me at the hospital that are way too big. And I have a Marlboro t-shirt on that's red. This is Marlboro. And I'm walking through Morgan City, Louisiana, the armpit of the South, is what they told me. And I'm walking to an AA meeting. And I get to this AA meeting because that's where I know to go. I've had a little rough time lately, and I don't know anybody in town. And they all share about how they had a bad day. So I shared with them the kind of days I'd had lately. And this one girl came up to me and she said, do you need some place to stay? And I said, well, I'm in a motel, but you know, I can't stay there forever. She said, why don't you come to my house? And I said, okay. Because we do that. You know, we do that. And I get in the car and she says to me, my 6th birthday is coming up. And I felt like drinking. And I've been praying for something to happen. And I said, well, I showed up in a helicopter, you know? And I thought, that's God working. You know, that is God working. So she took me to her house. I'm allergic to cats. She had cats. She smoked. The couch was about a foot too short. I had no clothes. And, you know, and I was fine. You know, I was just fine. People like you showed up. They picked me up. They took me to meetings. I was never without food. And I showed up and I got on that boat again, and we did 13 years. I did 13 years on the boat, and it was great. It was really great. So if you want to have adventures in, you know, sobriety, it's all you. I mean, just keep sober, don't drink. You know, come to meetings, help another alcoholic, and it's pretty cool stuff. And thank you all very much.
Another big round of applause.